Ars Electronica, 2006. Simplicity, the art of complexity.
Hello, I am John Maeda. I will be talking about my work. That was the homework that I got to talk about my work. I don't really talk or show my work very much anymore. I stopped about 3 years ago because I realized that maybe the ideas were more important. But today, I will show a little bit of the work. I use the laws of simplicity to simplify. I believe in lunch eating. So I also believe that if you're too long, it's not very interesting. So I may make this a little bit shorter than planned. As you can see on the screen here, that was my breakfast. I didn't eat very much. I ate a piece of bread and kiwi. Who ate breakfast? Breakfast? Very important. Who didn't eat breakfast? Oh, that's not good for you. Okay, eat breakfast next time. But at breakfast, I thought a little bit about something. And that was, I tell a story often, and I figured out the ending to the story, actually, just yesterday. And that is, the story goes like this. So maybe in 1995, I was very confused. You know, I mean, I did a lot of things. You know, I went to MIT, I did computer science, I did chip design, I did visual art, I did sculpture, I did all kind of crap, all kind of really ridiculous things. And whenever you do a lot of things, I mean, everyone here at Ars is a multiple person, a person who does so many things. And anyone who does too many things, your teacher will always tell you, what's wrong with you? You know, focus. How many teachers have told you to focus? There we go. See? Everyone, a teacher, they tell you to focus. Focus. Why do you do so many things? Just do one thing. And there's also the teachers that for some reason have a kind of a power complex, you know? Like, I remember I had one teacher, I was waiting to go to see one of my professors, and then he didn't arrive, and there was a professor next to him who was there, and for some reason he said, oh, come inside, come to my office. I never talked to this guy before. Come inside. So he sits me down, he closes the door, and for a half an hour, he tells me, you will never be nothing. You know, you suck. You everything. I said, oh, what is he doing, you know? So, this happens a lot too. This kind of teacher exists. But about the teacher that you know says, you know, just do one thing. You know, I talked to a gentleman named Igarashi Takenobu. He's famous for three-dimensional letter forms and a new kind of contemporary sculpture he's working on. But I told him this problem about focus. You know, and he says, "Oh, don't worry. I always had the same problem until I realized there's a Eastern way and a Western approach to knowledge gathering." He said that in the West, everyone's focused on just sort of being an expert. You know, just do one thing. And he said that in life, we're always building mountains. We're always building mountains. And so in the West, they build this mountain. And it's like a very sharp, it's very mountain and grows very quickly. And he said in the East, however, the model is to do many things. You know, this or this, this, this. And so you're building a mountain and it's very broad. And it doesn't grow as high. You know, it's a little more shallow. But he said, by the time that you're old, this mountain becomes a beautiful mountain, a very stable mountain. Like in Japan, the symbol of beauty is Mount Fuji. And so it's a very beautiful mountain. It's very stable. And he said that in the Western model, the problem is if you do one thing your entire life, you get so high. But if one thing was wrong, he said your mountain falls over. So that was his logic, and I used that thought to sort of think about life a lot. But then I realized I don't know if that's correct. You know, I was wondering about this, and on the walk yesterday, I realized that maybe there's a different way to look at it. You know, maybe we're building mountains, and because I the reason why I focused on this is because so many people will ask you, you know, are you an artist? Are you an engineer? Are you a scientist? Are you a writer? You know, are you a dog? You know, people ask you all kind of things like this. You know, what are you? You know, people always want to know what you are. You know, and if you say, I'm a person, they say, ha, 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 funny. What really are you? You know, it's kind of like in America, you know, the joke about racial diversity. Everyone asks me, you know, "So, where are you from?" And I say, "Seattle." And then they say, "No, no, where are you really from?" You know, it's very common. You know, it's a problem of people want to know. They want to label you. You know, identify what you are. Because once they know what you are, they own you, is the idea. And I'm sure all of you at Arts are people who they want to own you. They want to say, "Oh, you're an artist." Oh. And you say, "No, I'm more." "You know, you're an artist. You said that." And some people don't mind, you know, being an artist forever. Oh, they take a bath, they're an artist. You know, they eat lunch, I'm an artist. And so, and people like that. You know, that's okay. And I do believe that all models are okay. It's funny because I realize that there's this mono role. It's the most, you know, pure model. It's real simplicity. It's where you're able to sort of build this mountain of knowledge, and you're so high up in the sky, and it's a truly beautiful model because you perfect, you sort of really refine your craft. You know, you define the role. You know, if you're a multi-role person, you know, if you're like a student, teacher, father, manager, scientist, artist, you know, your mountain's actually very shallow. You know, no one likes to be called shallow, but maybe you are shallow because you're doing so many things, you know. But then I realized, in a sense, maybe a multi-role person is a temporal expert, you know. Maybe right this minute, I'm an artist. And then a minute later, I'm a father. And then a minute later, you know, I'm an engineer. And the fact that we can switch so often, you know, we can switch very quickly, you know. So it's like a little impulse signal. So actually, you're very high. It's not very low. It's very high, but it's happening for a small amount of time, okay? And I think that if you look at that model, maybe it's equivalent. I'm not saying one is better than the other. You know, maybe it gets as high as an expert. It's just a different curve. It's a different path, which I think is good. So I think that all models are good. All models are just as good. There's nothing better. All models are important. You know, if there weren't experts, the world would have no schools, which would maybe be better. I don't know. If there weren't generalists, you know, there wouldn't be Ars Electronica. I mean, no one would come here. You know, I mean, I can't imagine how many years no one came, and then suddenly everyone started coming. You know, because everyone loves to be a generalist. You know, the computer is bad, they say, but the computer is good because it also helps people become generalists. You know, and in that sense. I think that if you look at the simple life of monospeciality, you know, and the more complex life, that's supposed to say the complex life, sorry, polyspeciality, you get to the same place. You get high. You're able to think. You're an intellectual person. So everyone, give yourself a hug. Okay? You're all smart people. Give yourself an applause. There we go. There we go. There. We're all good. I sound like a preacher now, don't I? Now I will pass around the Kool-Aid or something. No, nothing happens like that. Anyway, so I really believe in simplicity in certain cases. You know, I've been, you know, thanks to the real great press office here, I've been interviewed many, many times, and I keep wondering what to say. And the common thing that comes up is like, you know, what is good? Is this good? Is this good? Is this good? Is this bad? And more I realize, you know, I mean, good and bad, you're always on the good side, you know. Whatever side you want, when you make a side, you're always on the good side. It's a strange coincidence. So I don't believe that there's good and bad anymore. In that case, simplicity, like going to my impulse model, sometimes it's good, sometimes it's bad. So just sort of to get some balance. I mean, and so in the case of, you know, I have like many things I could have showed you. I could have like bored you with every single thing, every little jumping thing that I ever made. And it'd be kind of boring, actually. So what I did is I took out sort of 10 things I wanted to show you. And then we can go get lunch. And the person who didn't have breakfast can eat something, because they're going to fall over in here. And then Gerfried will sue me or something, which is not good. So I'm going to show you some things that that are very naive, you know? I mean, they're things that I don't usually show because they're sort of from a funny time, and some I do show, but some I really don't show. And the first one is this. This is something I did where I was really struggling with the computer. I was trying to understand what is this thing? You know, it's strange because at the time, you know, tools, you know, like Adobe Illustrator came out to help you make things in print. But I was wondering, what if the tool did something you cannot do in print? Again, this is before the web, and I was wondering, you know, what if you made a tool like Illustrator where it just lets you choose a point on your curve, and this point, you see me selecting the point, I'm saying you, Mr. Point, can be happy. Go do whatever you want to do, you know? And with a little dial, I have a little dial in the right-hand corner there, and I can just sort of wiggle the dial, and I can change that and let it sit there forever. And I realized, you know, why don't they make this tool at the time? Why don't they make Illustrator so they can do this? Because, you know, we were so used to freezing things. You know, I would show this to my professors, and they would say, why do you do this? Make it stop. You know, that's a good one. Stop it there. You know? And it was kind of funny, you know. I thought, well, you know, maybe they're right. Maybe I should make it stop somehow. It was sort of understand that the medium, we liked how it made print, but we weren't sure how to make it make something different. We were very uncomfortable with the idea of a living medium. And that's where I really felt that the medium, if you left it alone, was just a sort of a living medium. And that's where I was inspired to make a computer, because at MIT, I was trained to design real computers, and I thought that the model was odd. And so to understand it, I designed this human-powered computer. And the human-powered computer started up in Kyoto, actually. These are the disk drive assistants, and they pick up the floppy disk. And a floppy disk is a piece of cardboard. And on this cardboard, it's a real computer program. I had to debug the computer. So this is the floppy disk drive woman. And she wears a disk. And some of you don't know what floppy disks maybe are, or just disks themselves. But you have to sort of like, there's a little disk inside, crazy. And there's data on it. And so she sort of spins the disk and finds the first sector and takes data off of it onto little whiteboard cards. And she passes it to the bus, and the bus sort of carries it over to memory. So this is a computer sort of booting up for the first time. You know, the moment when you turn the power on and the disk starts moving, and I had this vision of a kind of a discotheque of the computer, sort of living inside the computer, because the computer, when we look at it, it's such a boring object. You know, it has a little LED and a fan, and you open it up, and you know you shouldn't touch it. It's green or black now, it has metal, but there's nothing happening in there. But I imagine, what is it like to have a gigantic ultra discotheque inside the computer? Because that's what's happening. The computer is just, stuff's happening in there. And I wanted to see it and feel it and dance with it. And, you know, this is the bus. The bus is actually a bus. And this computer is programmed to do one thing. You know, on the computer, we have the mouse, and we move the mouse around. You know, the arrow moves on the screen. This mouse tracks the cursor, but a normal mouse, when you move the mouse, it takes, it's very fast. On this computer, it takes 30 minutes for the cursor to change on screen. So it's a very slow computer, to give you a sense that actually the computer is so fast. This computer is very slow, even though it seems very exciting and dynamic. So from that realization of the dynamic medium, I went back to the computer. This making this computer changed how I thought about the computer. And I basically threw away all the computer interface and all these kind of things and just wanted to think about the real, most basic ideas. And actually, let me see, this is very hard. This is the first strange thing. I say strange because I really don't know why it looks like this. I think the Lion King was very big in Tokyo that year. So suddenly I wanted everything to be jaggy. And there's no other reason. I was wondering about the screen, because a screen, has so many pixels on it. So I wondered what it was like if just it was just one pixel. The computer is just one pixel. And how would I program that pixel? And so I had a very simple visual language for defining what these different levels might look like. And the computer is so fast now that I'm not sure this works properly, but let's see if this works. I've dragged the pink over there. So pink is there. And if you see me move my mouse, it sort of shows the mouse is moving, and I can... basically, the idea was this, that this is essentially a program, a very simple visual program that maps motion to color. And this is what I made. It was a one big pixel where I can interact with it like this. And this is where I felt, you know, this is a very strange medium. You know, it's able to respond in this way. It's just very, very unnatural. And from this moment, I began to look for things that just respond, things that just react. And after this, I made a second in this series of reactive graphics, and that was Reactive Graphics 2. And this one I never show because it's too dangerous to show, because the audio-video people usually hate me if I show this, because it requires changing the resolution. But because of the great Ars Electronica AV staff, they are unafraid. Okay? So let's see this. You ready, guys? I'm going to change resolutions. Ah, it worked. Hey, that was a good few, huh? I never showed this. Hiding. Oh. One moment, classic may be broken. One second. Let's see if this one works. That, so maybe, I'm sorry, it doesn't want to come out. Yeah. Next time, Ars Electronica. I'd like to show you Reactive Graphic 2. It's the most unstable thing I ever made. maybe that's a good example of that. Okay. So anyways, what you would have seen is something very odd, very too colorful, too reactive. And based upon that, I wanted to understand. Because again, you know, I think the problem with technology is you always want to understand it too much. You want to master it somehow. So I made this system. It was called Process Color Dance. And this system, I was trying to make a way to program paint, program inks. And it was in Japanese, so these things are in a strange script. Basically, I can draw in different colors. This is not rocket science. This is based upon the ink color, I can tell it to do certain things. For instance, I can talk to the blue color, and I can tell it to always move left. See it moving left very slowly every 1 second. And the one thing of making this, I realized something funny. And that was that I would make this rectangle, and it's moving very slowly over to the right. And once it gets off the screen, it keeps on going. You know, it just keeps on going. I don't know. I can't see it anymore. But inside the computer, it keeps on going. And there was something about that struck me, how we forget that the computer can do so many things that we cannot see, you know? Or I can tell it how, you know, the blue interacts with the red. Have the red carry the blue all the way off the screen. And again, when it goes off the screen, it's still going. And I realized how our view of the computer is so focused on the screen, and there's so much happening outside the screen. Furthermore, you know, if I had this computer powered forever, this would happen forever. And it's just happening in the computer. And I love this idea that as a time media, you know, as a space media, it really defies how we think. And based upon these kinds of thoughts, I began to make very simple things, actually simplistic things in reality, because I had a child, you know, I had two young children, and my hands are very, very hurt from typing too much, and I didn't want them to use the computer. It was kind of like, oh, that's a bad for you, you know. So I wanted to give them a different kind of computer. And furthermore, you know, those of you who have small children, who has a small children? Small children, raise your hand. Yeah, I guess small children. Small children, when you're typing, and they're sitting on your lap, they want to type too, really bad. So what I did is I began to, you know, make things to try to trick them into typing on a different keyboard. I made many things in this series. This is really my favorite. I call it Rain, keyboard Rain. So I would have my child sit there and play with this type of thing. But you know, a child's really smart. And after maybe 1 second, she got bored and wanted to type on my keyboard. So this was an investment of maybe 3 hours, and it was lost. But it was good because it made me think about the keyboard as more of an abstract input device. Inspired this work. It's called The Color Typewriter, because I do believe the computer is so, or at least at the time, was so focused on, you know, application software like Microsoft Word or Excel or Photoshop or whatever, and I thought that, well, what if it just didn't do anything like we usually think? And what if you wanted to type in color? So I made a color typewriter. Alphabet over there. You see the ascenders and descenders. And I realized I can just type to anyone. I can type letters to people.
Like, hello.
This. And in reality, you might not type letters to your mother like this because she probably cannot read it. So I made it so she could read it. And these kinds of things, I made many like that. Many things like this. And I actually put most of these things on the web, so you can try and run them yourself. And this sort of led to another experiment called the Reactive Books. These are books that I created in 1990, I guess, four-ish. They were just books with software, because at the time there was no web, and you know, the idea of packaging software like this was probably kind of foreign. I made the Reactive Square. It focused on input from sound. Flying Letters was something that took the input from the mouse. And there was 12 O'Clocks. 12 clocks. You can download these off the web. Basically 12 little clocks. You can just sort of watch time, because in reactivity or reaction, I realized you could use the mouse, because the computer responds to the mouse. You can use the sound input, to change it. But you can also time. You know, time is the most natural input to the computer. I mean, we're not controlling it. It's the one input we cannot control. And also, tap, type, write, focused on the keyboard input. And these works actually are now accessioned by MoMA in their permanent collection. So that's a nice ending to that, because the most important thing was a man named Mr. Enami. And Mr. Enami was my producer, actually, who enabled me to create these books. I mean, when you are a creative person, you don't really matter. I mean, unless there's someone that's going to help you get your work out, you're hidden, So Mr. Enami was like this amazing guy, He was sort of conflicted because he made some of his money off of porn. But he also believed in digital art, so he invested in digital art. He's a very strange, wonderful man. And it's funny because in Japan he's completely forgotten, because he suffered a stroke and went into a coma and never recovered, actually. He can only blink now. But he was an amazingly vibrant man. The one thing I loved about him was you'd be working in the studio and it'd be like 2 o'clock in the morning and everyone's tired. And he'd come in and he'd say in Japanese, if I am here, everything is okay. Like, it was such a wonderful man. And I think that these people to me are the art, not this digital art construction or whatever. And that's why, I was struck by, I was just saying to Mark outside, how really the art of Ars Electronica to me, sure they're the artists, but there's Gerfried and his amazing staff. I mean, I'm not kidding here. They're not paying me like tons of money to say this. This is not a commercial. People who are able to help other people, this is an amazing thing. It's nothing to look away from. I always say that to teaching. If you ever had a bad teacher, become a better teacher. I think that teachers are the people that give a lot of time to help students. Sometimes they are evil, yes. And those evil people will always be there. That's why you have to be a good teacher, a Gandalf-like teacher. In essence, after that, I made a lot of, the web sort of took off, and I bought like a how to program in Java book, it was only this thick, it was like an inch thick, it was manageable. And I started programming in Java, and I made a lot of things on the web. It was a good time, and it was very good because my wife was very worried. Because she was like, what are you doing? Who needs this stuff? Nobody needs this. And I said, I was stressed out. But luckily, the web as a delivery vehicle emerged, so suddenly I had all kind of jobs, so it was good, And I also focused on education because, as I mentioned yesterday, I was taught by my teachers that to make better work out there, you have to educate students that are better than you. I mean, my students, they've done so much amazing things. I mean, I know Golan Levin is here, and he's been doing some amazing work, and they all are doing wonderful things. Because my students became so successful, I had to change because I don't like to stop or obstruct people. So I went into a different phase. In 2001, I began to, I don't know how to describe it, I began to work with regular materials, conventional materials. I bought these plastic blocks that were all broken, and I spent 4 months making them perfectly smooth. This was a very nice thing. And it was in a shop where there was no phone coverage. No one could find me. So it was my special luxury. And I also made some paintings where I put little palm computers. When they came out, I put little palms into paintings. And I had a phase where I made rooms out of blue tape. This worried my wife. She said, never more. Stop this. But I enjoyed it. It was good. I began to make, these embedded computers, these PIC chip-based, PIC and AVR-based systems. I began to learn how to program these, and I made little objects like this. I was into food, so I made like things like a bento box lamp out of rice and an egg you can talk to. This is my favorite because it's, like a R2-D2. This is Egg2-D2. It makes similar sounds. And I was very interested in food, so I made things out of pretzels and potato chips and everything like this. Because I've always been sort of faced with this sort of understanding. It was mentioned yesterday about the beauty of the pencil. I think the pencil is beautiful, no question. I mean, it's just direct. I mean, it isn't the pencil that's great. It's our hand that's great. It's our arm. This is really cool, this tool. The pencil is not the tool. You can, like, spit and make stuff, so the pencil's okay. The hand, the arm, is what's happening. And this eye thing, this is amazing. You can see, you get feedback. This is a great computer. But this computer that I know today is like this. It's always breaking. And so I'm curious about a better world with different kinds of computers, a new kind of computer invented by artists, a computer that is not about mathematics and, the military complex's sort of machine logic of the world, right or wrong, are you with us or are you without us? I think that the computer has to change. The computer, the new computer, is going to be very different, but it won't be invented by technologists. It's not going to happen. So some young artists or even some older artists here might invent a new kind of computer beyond the von Neumann sort of architecture, beyond all these ridiculous, mathematically wonderful, but ridiculously wonderful ideas. What's it look like? One thing I really feel at this conference, is that, and I see it every day, and, technologists, when they make things, they're usually unable to use the tool. This is the biggest flaw. When someone makes a tool, sometimes it's because they lack creativity. Sometimes it's because they're just so tired. They're giving birth to the tool. It came out. Oh, I'm so tired. And then they cannot do anything with it. It happens, this is very common. People who are not, grow up in a technology-based education, it's very hard to make original works. The computer program, a computer program is just a tree. It's sort of the main calling the subroutines, and it keeps coming back. And if you put it like this, it's like a tree, a root like this. And if you think about originality, originality is everything off the tree, not on a tree. So it's very hard to be original once a software tool emerges. And when people say, what should I do? Shall I smoke more? Shall I kind of like be stressed out? That's okay. But I think that when in doubt, do both. If you have a problem with this, do both. If you don't have a problem, if you're happy with the way you are, don't change. It's okay. It's all right. And on my final note, I think for young people, I always tell them, younger, do more, think less. If you're older, I say do less, think more. Because if you do too much, then the young people cannot make more. This is the problem. It's like the eclipsing factor. So when you're older, just stop doing it. Let someone else do something. Give them a chance. Go think. It's fun thinking. Anyways, that's the conclusion of my talk. I have to go on an airplane to see my family. But thank you for your time and attention. And thank you, staff, for making it all happen. Go eat lunch. Eat lunch.